Welcome to Mormons on Mushrooms. In this podcast, we discuss alternative methods for healing from trauma and seeking a fulfilling life. We often discuss triggering topics. We ask that you make your personal mental health a priority. In addition, the opinions offered by our guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the hosts of this podcast. If you'd like to support the program, please visit www.patreon.com/Mormons on Mushrooms. Thank you for listening and enjoy.
Hey guys.
Hey, good morning.
Can you hear us all right?
Yeah, I can hear you great.
I don't know what's wrong with my sound.
What's wrong with your sound? Sound good to me.
Well, it's just quiet. It's just like you guys are both quiet and I've got it like pumped up, you know? Oh, wait, maybe there's like a volume control down here. Hold on.
Yeah. Hey, it's good to see you.
Can you hear me popping my knuckles?
You too. Really good to see you.
You too, man.
It's been a hot second.
Yeah.
Man, I have to tell you, I just woke up.
It's nice.
That's why I'm a little bit late.
It's okay.
It's Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Easy like Sunday morning, my friend. Mm-hmm.
I was like, we had people in town for work. And so I've been like on a 2-day bender and I'm just like, man.
Well, I've been, we've had 2 nights of Piehead Jesus visiting us. So
we sat with 4 siblings. On Friday they did a journey, and that was
that's cool.
That was intense.
Yeah, it was pretty
good.
Wait, they were siblings or your siblings?
No, they're siblings. They are siblings. We sat with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, they dug up some stuff.
Yeah. We don't need to go into detail but it was a lot.
No names or anything, but it was, yeah.
I came in at the tail end of all of it because I had to work, but
I was holding space.
It was really good. It was really good stuff, though.
So speaking of which, James and Russell, right? Is that correct?
Oh, okay. Shoot. That's right. We even have it written down here.
I'm going to write it down, so too.
Cut off that little first part.
We'll cut that out.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.
See, look at how alert you are.
Yeah, some things never change, no matter how, hungover I am.
That's why it takes the two of you to do this, right? You have your strengths.
That's right. We even wore matching blue shirts today so that we could just tag in and out, you know?
Look That's at awesome. You.
Who is it? I don't even know. They're just twins.
Yeah, the same
it's
guy.
Just the hair. That's different.
No, they're just twins. And the balding guy over here, and he's got that nice, thick hair.
This guy. Come on, guy. But we're both kind of feeling it today, Doug.
Yeah, is that right? I thought so. When you were texting me at like midnight, I was like, oh, maybe Mike's drinking too.
I was thinking. And then I had a hard time sleeping last night, but we're good. I'm feeling good. Love. Feeling the good. Missing you guys, you know?
Oh, same.
Yeah, you too. Really
you
good
too.
To
yeah, it's
guys.
Been almost 2 months, huh?
Really has, hasn't it?
Already 2 months?
Yeah. It's been almost 2 months. Like next weekend or maybe in 2 weeks, it'll be 2 months.
So maybe we can use that as the intro. Is that kind of cool?
That's great. Yeah. And one thought too I had is, you know, it might be nice just to have a little bit of moment. Like we've got Palo Santo and like the incense. Maybe we can just have a little moment.
I love
just
that.
Just to kind of get centered. And then kind of like we do. How does that sound?
Yes,
fantastic. Please. I think that's just what I need right now, actually.
Okay.
Well, let's do it. You and we'll get the lighter. Little Buddha here.
Incense and our incense burner that Russell made. Because he can do everything, right?
So for those listening,
we're lighting some Palo Santo.
Palo Santo is a wood that is believed to clear negative energy and the smoke as you release it. We're just going to do kind of around. Yeah, cleanse.
Yeah, it smells. With this microphone.
Fucking good.
It smells amazing. Yeah.
Good.
Ooh. Yeah. So just to give us a moment to kind of like let go of the static of what we were dealing with before coming to this, be it sleep, be it lots of crazy. And just kind of breathe in nice and deep in the abdomen. Just being kind of centered, just allowing ourselves to be present. To scan the body and see if there's any tension, especially with the parts of the body we're going to be using today, with the mind, the heart. Kind of release, just release that and breathe that out. And if there's something that's kind of coming in that's distracting you, just think, hey, that I see you and I will take care of you later. In this moment, you're just present. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Guys, I've been missing
Russell.
I've been missing my gay shamans.
Oh, we're right here.
Which reminds me, I've got to go get my scarf. Well, give me like 1 second.
Yes.
Go get your scarf.
We've got scarves.
And Doug, yeah. We need to get you a scarf.
Yes, I would love a scarf. I was gifted a scarf last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was kind of a weird thing. I had to call Mike about it immediately because it was one of those synchronicities that happens that just like blows your mind. You know? There, I was like, is. There he is. Look at that scarf.
Yeah.
It's so dope. I fucking love it. I wish you guys could have seen me in the solstice with this on.
Oh, yeah.
It was great.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
So cool. I know. We wish we could have gone. There were so many weeks in a row that we were gone weekends. I was like, okay, we've got to kind of come back to home.
But next year, we will be there.
Yeah.
With scarves on.
Three big weekends in a row. After you, and then my family reunion, and then another big weekend. And I was like, oh, wow. We've been gone.
It's like you guys are always gone doing something, some adventure.
Yeah, we're pretty busy.
Speaking of first weekend we spent together, let's kind of tell people who the heck we're talking to here. So we're with James and Russell. And they have an amazing story to tell, but the reason we got connected with them is the four of us and our spouses spent a weekend in Sedona, and two of you held space for the rest of us and curated an experience doing LSD that actually a candy flip, right?
Yeah.
And it was just one of the greatest times. I know it was one of the greatest times I ever had in my life. And Mike and I talking afterwards, we felt the same way.
Same.
And your story of how you got into this kind of stuff and how the two of you got together and where your life's journeys have taken you to this point, to these glowing beings of pure healing and love. Mm-hmm. We loved hearing it in person, and so we just were like, man, I think that podcast listeners would love to hear your story. So welcome, thank you, James and Russell. You. We love you a lot.
Love you guys.
Love you guys. Thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah.
So background, we were raised Mormon, you know, and our sexuality was a thing we just didn't want to deal with. It was a nice box. You can put it all in and store it away until you can't anymore. And it took me 50 years of my life to come to terms with it. And James...
It was a little bit earlier in life, but not a lot earlier. Came out to myself at about 31, and then finally came out to my ex at about 30. Well, I was 38, and then started the journey of becoming me at that point, and finally leaving that relationship at 42 and met Miles. And here we are a few years later together.
I was living, I was working for the church and living out of, in Utah, and James was living in Arizona. Yeah. And, and I was processing all this and coming to terms with it. And we met on Facebook. It's a cute story. We'll save for another time, but, yeah. But in that was a lot of decision-making, a lot of therapy. And up to that point in my life, I had never taken anything. I'd never had an alcohol or like anything.
How old were you at this point?
I was
52.
Well, I was 51 at that point. And then a good mutual friend of ours was coming up to Utah to do an ayahuasca ceremony. And he called and said, hey, he was explaining this. And my research mind was like, I got to figure this out. Like, what is this? And I researched a lot. And there's a lot to learn about ayahuasca. It's a big medicine, one of the biggest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so with that, I jumped in. That was my first psychedelic experience, was ayahuasca.
No alcohol, no cannabis.
I had
no
had a sip.
He'd had alcohol.
Okay.
At that point, because I introduced him to that at a bar in Phoenix.
A gay bar.
Okay. A gay bar. His first experience with a gay bar, well, as a gay man.
Yeah.
And his first experience with alcohol, it was a chocolatini.
Oh, I mean, that's the way to do it. If you're going to come out of the Mormon closet and you're going to have those two worlds collide on the first time, I think a chocolatini is the only thing that you can really order, right? I
mean, right. Yeah. I'd had my first sip of alcohol only like 4 or 5 months earlier. Like I had some wine and then I had a few shots at the conference that we went to. And
yeah, we were substance virgins.
Yeah,
for sure.
Very much.
And now here we go. Ayahuasca started off with a bang. Yeah.
So in that, one of the reasons I wanted to do it is because I was trying to make decisions about where I go forward, how I go forward. Do I come and move down with James? I mean, what about my kids? Because I've got 3 kids from my first marriage. Wonderful. Like, that's a lovely experience. And I love my kids. But, you know, there's a lot of decisions to make. And ayahuasca really cracked open a ego. Like, there was a lot of fear in that, letting go. But then when I finally surrendered, and we'll talk more about surrendering, it allowed me to really process these decisions. And so it was pretty pivotal, at least.
Yeah, I was... I had never done anything like this. I introduced Russell to alcohol with chocolatinis, but he introduced me to psychedelics with ayahuasca. Because he did it before I did. And I was like, I don't know what this is. I was kind of freaked out about it a little bit. But I'm also kind of one of those, let's just do it. Fuck it all. Yeah. I'll just try it. Yeah. So after that, what was it? About 5 months after you did ayahuasca, you moved here.
Yeah.
We'd been dating for a year and a half at that point.
Yeah.
And after you moved here, we had the opportunity for another ayahuasca ceremony here in the Phoenix area. Right. And I was invited to join in. You were going to do it. And I was like, okay, I don't really know a lot. I know what he's told me. But let's do this. We're going to do it as a couple. And it was scary. I didn't know what to expect. I'd never done a psychedelic before and went in. And that first night I took the medicine, I laid down, I puked about 10 minutes later and I went deep. I mean, seriously, within 10 minutes, I was in deep and flying through outer space, and I've seen colors and lights, and then went through some dark tunnels, a lot of emotion. And that first night, there was a lot of low, a lot of just trying to figure out. My brain was like, what's going on here? What is this? Am I ever going to get out? I was in a loop at one point where I thought I was going to die. Oh. I was like, I'm never getting out of this. This is it. And I had a mantra And the shaman was good about telling us, hey, you've got to have a mantra. And mine was to hold my heart, tap on myself and say, morning will come. Morning will come.
Oh, yeah.
Because I knew that morning would come. If I did that, I was all right. I wasn't dead. And so I really went deep, but I didn't learn as much the first night as I did the second night.
Well, what a good,
so I went really deep.
What a cool mantra just for life.
Right. And that's what I do every time. If I go into a dark place, I'm just able to go, morning will come. And it did. It did.
It always does, is the thing.
It always does.
So far.
Yeah.
And the next day I was like, I'm not doing this. I'm going to go home. I'm going to sleep. And I'm not going to do this the next night. I can't go through that again.
Two night ceremony.
Yeah. It was scary. And I'd already paid my money. I was like, I don't care. Fuck it. I'm not going to do it. There's no way in hell I'm doing that again. That was scary. And wonderful at the same time. Right. I mean, you've been through that and there's like that really cool part of it. And there's that really dark part too. I didn't know that I wanted what I wanted to face. I was afraid of facing more. And so the second night I was like, okay, we're going to do it. I paid the money. Damn it. I paid money. And I'm a little bit driven by financial security. And so I paid this money. I'm going to get the most out of it. So out of just pure stubbornness, I went the second night after taking a nap for like 2 hours. That was it. And I took a smaller dose, but I went in really deep. And it was like a really internal trip that night. And it was really cool because at one point I was completely cocooned in my sleeping bag. And I went through my entire childhood. So I actually relived my childhood from the beginning till I left my home as a child. And I actually smelled, tasted, felt, talked with my siblings, with my mom and dad. I was able to relive everything. And I can't explain that other than that. It feels like I really relived it. And I was able to see that I really had a spectacular childhood. Like I had an amazing, beautiful, fulfilled childhood. There was nothing that was weird for me. I'd always wondered, why am I gay? That was a big question in my mind. Why am I gay? And what was it? Was I abused? Was I sexually abused? Did I have a bad relationship with certain people in my life or whatever? I had amazing role models around me. I had beautiful neighbors, beautiful family around me. I was raised with a lot of extended family. And I realized at that point that had nothing to do with anything in my past. I'm just gay. I was just made this way. And for the first time in my life, I was able to accept my sexuality for what it was. And
thank you, ayahuasca.
Thank you, ayahuasca. Thank you. Grandmother taught me. And then I was able to kind of float and see grandmother at that point.
Mm. While James was in that, it was amazing to kind of be in that next. We were next to each other. So energetically, you're feeling that and sensing that. But my first experience, I'll tie back into that because it does lend itself to the what, why am I the way I am as gay? And the first night I did ayahuasca, I took 4 medium doses and nothing happened. I was purging, but I wasn't seeing anything. I wasn't, you know, people around me were like crying and laughing and, you know, all those experiences. And I was kind of like, I'm getting cheated here. This sucks. And so the next night when the shaman came in and I just took a large dose and I went right in deep, but so deep that I thought I was going to die. And what that was when I found out later, it was my unwillingness to let go.
Yeah.
It's fear. It's that fear of like letting go of ego, surrendering to it. And to the point where the shaman came over and he's like, I'm going to put some cold water on you. Cause I was hyperventilating. I was just like, chest felt like it was going to explode, you know, just cause I couldn't get enough air on me. I started breathing. And again, that's why breath work is so critical in these medicine experiences, but breathing. And then as soon as I was calm and surrendered, all of a sudden this amazing cocoon of love just surrounded my body. Mm-hmm. And it was masculine love. It was a non-sexual masculine healing love that I've never felt in my entire life. And I could feel the energy of the men in that space. There were women too. But in that, I needed that cocoon to feel what I had been missing. And it was beautiful to experience that. And then from that point on, just a lot of healing. There was a scenario with my dad. My dad had passed away, and a lovely man. We just did not connect. And I think inherently he probably knew I was gay, and there was that kind of resistance to it. But in that, my dad, I could feel and almost see him floating above me, and our DNA was going from one to the other. And as it exchanged, it would come back cleansed, like pure. Just so it was a lot of beautiful healing with him as we exchanged in that visual. So that, I mean, there's a lot more to it, but those were the kind of two points I think were so significant in that experience.
One of the things I'm trying to wrap my head around, it's just so interesting, is when I see James and Russell, see you two together. For me, it's hard for me to imagine a reality where you guys aren't together, right? And and doing your adventures and, but 50 plus years. And Russell, you don't even look over 45, you know?
You're very kind.
And so just to think that, wait, no, there were 50 plus years, you know, of without each other and without. And that's just a long time, you know? I mean,
yeah,
it's relative, but it feels like a long time to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, thank you, by the way, that I appreciate that. It's almost like I have a renewal on life and I'm in a different life now. And I honestly think had I done psychedelics when I was a teenager, I know for me, I wouldn't have had the kind of healing that was needed at this stage in my life. Because I think I'm more intentional as a mature adult versus, and again, nothing against 19-year-olds and 18-year-olds, but, you know, it becomes a lot more of a healing process than, you know, maybe recreational or just, you know, our brains have developed. We've experienced a lot more. So,
which I think would be a good thing to talk about too at some point is, you know, when is it recreational and when is it healing, or is it ever recreational? Is it always healing? You know, that kind of thing.
I'd love to dive a little bit deeper into that conversation because I think that a lot of times we have this binary thing of, okay, is it recreational or is it therapeutic or medicinal or whatever? And right. What happens in a lot of situations is even when trying to do something like that for recreational purposes, the medicine's powerful and has its own you know, intentions and does not do what you expect it's going to do sometimes. And that recreational experience turns into a very healing therapeutic experience, you know, and sometimes, and quite frankly, sometimes I've done it like with, you know, Mike with the show me the wounding.
Yeah.
I want to heal. I want to go into it. And I do it and it just turns into a dance party. And I'm like, oh, it turned out to be recreational. I'm ready to just dance. And that's what my body needs right now. And that's what I've been like craving.
Right. And healing, actually.
And then, healing.
That and then therefore healing. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The movement. It's like our experience with you guys in Sedona, like it was a lot of joy, even though things bubbled up, like there was a lot of release in that, a lot of movement. And it was that to me because I think that was our intention overall. We wanted to have joy. We wanted to have expression. And I think that's one thing that as we talk about intentions or like recreational versus healing, I think individuals, this may not be for everybody. And I have to say that in the beginning, because some people are not prone to letting go. And I'll use an example of two people that I've sat with. One had prepared for 3 years to do a mushroom experience. She was so prepared and she went in and she did a lot of incredible healing to the point where some of her physical ailments were gone. From what she let go. It wasn't me. It was her ability to let go of a lot of pain. Compare that to another friend who for 2 years has been wanting to do it. And she reached out and we sat with her within 30 minutes. She's like, I want this to be over. I want it to end. She was doing mushrooms. You don't just turn the switch off. Oh, and right. So even though it was really hard for her and us.
Yeah, holding right? space.
It was very hard.
She wanted it to be over and she wasn't really prepared. But the medicine actually taught her, you control a lot. And this is a lesson of like letting go. So I think as we talk about these today and in your other podcasts, everybody kind of needs to do their own research and they're really like intuition of like, is this really right? And with that, then decide, do I need more healing? Do I need more like celebration? And that's why I think if it's recreational healing or in between, I think always bring an intention into that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And I just know as Mormons, a lot of the times, and we've said this before, but we can afford to bring a little more fun to things. Some, you know, we were taught to just take life a lot too seriously, you know, from a young age. And so adding a little fun, a little recreation, dancing it, those lights and the, I'm just thinking about the night in Sedona with the music playlist, James, that you were like spot on with. And yeah, that was
my music.
That was just a good time. And because of that, it was healing. You know, you have those nights, you know, even if it's not on psychedelics, just a night out with friends, come back and you're rejuvenated and it's healing. Right.
So yeah, can we talk about that night? Is it cool to
just kind of that was so fun.
All the things.
Yeah. So there's a question that comes after this little side story, but so yeah, we had the time of our lives that night in Sedona. You know, there was like almost like we had set this container of space where we're the only people that existed in the entire universe. Yeah. And there were two rooms, you know, there was the room, like a main room, and there was lights and there was some music and people chatting and people dancing and people were doing that kind of thing.
And then just not to really cut you off, but you were saying the only people that existed in the universe. We took a walk at one point and I think we were the only people that existed in Sedona. And we didn't see another soul.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And then we're like, weird. Like, and then we had a moment where we're like, oh, there's another dance party. We hear it. Let's go find it. And we went to go find it. We're like, oh wait, no, that's just ours.
It's ours. Yeah. we like did a whole lap around the entire cosmos and got back to the same spot.
That's right.
But then there was a second space to go. It was an outdoor, you know, deck type of thing where you could look at the stars and you could take the vibration down just a notch and kind of low and go, you know, shift into a lower gear. And then you could just suddenly get up and move, you know, five steps mm-hmm. into the other room. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm back. And now I can dance and I can have this good time. But all of this happened in a big way. We talk about set and setting all the time.
Right.
But that setting came from a big part of it was the two of you setting up that space and clearing a container for us to have the right experience. And we don't talk about the details very much of when we say set and setting. We don't, you know, we don't get into the details of what setting means. Would the two of you be willing to just kind of go through a little bit of the prep?
Oh, absolutely.
And what you do to set such a nice space for people to safely trip?
Yeah
maybe, absolutely.
Maybe we could. I do a lot of the prep.
He does. I do a lot of prep as far as like getting things together with you. Like
packing
and stuff like that. But
and then in the experience, James is really good about perimeter
work.
Yeah,
making sure that space remains safe. Yeah,
Russell he sits with a lot of people, and he works with a lot of people. He's not always on medicine, by the way.
Yeah.
He does that. Actually, he's not on medicine a lot when he does that, but he's amazing getting that preparation ready. So
kind of maybe guide the listeners a little bit. I think. The container, like you said, making sure that the space is safe. It doesn't have to be familiar necessarily, but like when we got there the night before we did anything. So we were familiar with the surroundings. I think the difference between a setting where you're familiar with it and you know it and understand it versus recreational. We went to a rave on LSD one time
Yikes.
That was an experience. There were 10,000 people, and it was a little freaky because you can't find the porta potties when you're so not knowing the container versus knowing the container. So that container, and I think, like you said, Doug, is to have spaces that you can kind of migrate from and to, because, like, you know, there were times when one of us would need to go recharge, right? Like, I need some quiet. I need to, like, move inside so that I could go outside. That can be in a different room. It could be with different music or no music at all. It could be headphones. It could be, you know, eye shades. It could be water. It could be a pool or hot tub. Like, wherever that is that you can go. And for me, for us, I think nature, having a space with nature and an indoor space is really beautiful, because nature on most of these medicines helps you kind of reground to Gaia, the earth. It's kind of that deeper meaning. And then, you know, moving into the inside where there's like the music and maybe the levity or tastes and smells, pizza, for instance. But I think the other
I got pizza story.
Just making sure that, because sometimes we can get stuck in a loop in medicine. And I refer to medicine because when, you know, growing up in the 80s, it's a mind bending of like, when you say drugs, it's just such a bad thing. And now with medicine, I refer to it as medicine. So with that, when people are inside and if they start to get in a loop, as a sitter or a friend, to just either like, hey, let's, if you want, do you want to move into that a little bit more? And if not, just even getting up and walking to another space helps shift out of that loop if they want that. So I'm hoping I'm like explaining that container, but I think the large part of that container is intentions. So as we were in Sedona, we had dinner the night before and talked about intentions. What is it you want to bring into this?
Yeah.
And then we dosed, and then we did meditation.
Oh, wow.
And I think meditation is such a beautiful way to kind of clear the mind, and even hape or rape, like that's a good grounder too. But whatever modality brings you centered, because if we've got our cell phones and we've got like Apple Watches dinging and binging, and it's going to pull you out of that flow. And so if we can remove distractions so we can be in it, and we've learned that you just want to set those aside to be fully present in it.
And I think too, just because that is the beautiful part of it, the spiritual part, getting prepared spiritually or emotionally for a trip. But I don't think a lot of people realize either, to really set that up, how much work it takes to get ready for it. And so thank you for asking, because I think that's part of it too. A lot of people just, you know, I don't know if they realize there are hours of preparation that we will put into something, getting ready for a trip like that. So just packing, making sure we have all of our little pieces together, fitting it into the car, right? Getting it to the location, setting it up in a way that hopefully feels almost like we didn't have to do a lot of work to get there.
Yeah.
Right. For the people that are involved.
Yeah.
So bringing in the like mobile singing bowls, and what we like to do is provide an experience so that whatever comes up, you have something there that you can work with. And if we don't ever use it, it's fine, but it's there. Mm. So like an art kit, for instance, or
stones, or crystals,
stones, scarves, music, you know, the lights, the
food,
all of those things, supplements.
All the supplement regimen was on point. I just felt great the next day. I don't know.
Yeah. Did you even, cause we did. Flip. Go ahead.
I was a little tired, but I didn't get any of the blues that I typically get after Molly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So the candy flip.
Yeah.
In the research. So MDMA or Molly is going to dump the serotonin from the brain. That's what makes you feel so good. But there are supplements you can take that help eliminate or alleviate that next day blues because it's helping with the blood-brain barrier to kind of strengthen that. So as we're in it, like every hour, as you guys remember, like, here's your supplement. Yeah. But it is, it's great because it helps the inner integration afterward. You're not so like, ah, oh, you can actually integrate, I think, better and more efficiently.
Yeah. And I think we worked well together as a team. Like Russell was saying, he does a lot of that preparation ahead of time. I work with you.
Yeah.
But during the experience, I'm the timekeeper. I have no problem with that. Like I can keep time with or without a watch. I just kind of know what time it is. I make sure everything's safe. I make sure things are cleaned up and I love it. Like that's just me.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. So that then Russell can kind of enjoy that experience post the prep. And then I do a lot of the after experience and perimeter stuff. So it's kind of fun. We've got a good team going on.
Well, it was so cool to watch that in action because it's exactly as you're describing it, James. Towards the beginning, Russell is kind of our shaman, our guru. He's kind of, setting the space, setting the safe container. And you are, James, kind of working the perimeter. I could ask you what time it was, and you would just out of nowhere, you'd be like 7:22. And I'd be like, what does that even mean? Like, what do you just say numbers out loud when I ask you? And then you would always be right. And I was like, well, how the hell does this guy know what time it is? But then there was a shift. Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a shift as the night went on where Russell, it almost seemed like you gave yourself permission or you were then free to maybe dive into the last half of your trip while James, you then sort of tagged in and kind of took over maintaining and closing down the space as things started to wind down. So it was just cool watching the two of you work as a team because it was just like, it's like the shows you've been doing on the road for the last 40 years together. Yeah. And you know each other's timing and you know that's each other's like setups.
I can't imagine them not together.
it was so cool. Yeah.
And I love how you talk about the energetics of it all though and the attention, because that's what you feel in an experience, the attention that people are bringing, the space holders bringing into it. And Russell, you were talking about your ayahuasca experience and that cocoon, that white cocoon you were in, and how important it probably was that night, just because, when I see, you're a very empathic being, and I can see in a scenario like that, just like pulling people's emotions and absorbing it. And an interesting thing was happening that night where, James, I don't know what I did to you, but like you were open.
Wow.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
James. So,
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, you were feeling everything. It was almost like I was dumping into you, but that freed me up. And I didn't. It must have been unconscious, but I was feeling great. And then you kept looking at me like, I don't know. You would speak to my heart and like you're feeling. You carry a lot of weight. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And then like, so thank you for carrying my burden that night. I don't know what.
I was going to talk about that, Mike, because that was a really amazing experience for me. I'm not an empath like Russell is, like you are, Mike. I'm intuitive, but I'm not an empath like that. Like I allow people to just keep their feelings.
Yeah.
And that's them. And then I'm me. And I really felt into what you feel. That was crazy. I'd never felt that kind of pain on medicine. Where it was just like the whole gut. And then it was like a snake just winding through my body up and down. And those feelings just kind of moving around. I was like, is this what you feel with people and their feelings? And you're like, yeah, it's like, damn, that's a lot. And there were times where I had to lay down.
Yeah.
Cause it was a lot. You carry a lot, but thank you. Thank you for letting me hold that for you because I was able to hold it. And I say I'm like a fish, like I'll bring it in and then I let it go out for people, right? Mm-hmm. And
I appreciated you carrying that because I think, Mike, you and I being empaths, like in the beginning, there was a real, like we were doing eye gazing and so as I sit with people, I tend to like take on or absorb some of that. And so that's why, as Doug, as you said, is like, as I'm moving through the experience, if I can't release that energy, then I carry it with me and it gets heavy. I had a good friend, still have a good friend, but we were doing a trip and he turned to me, he said, I don't want you dying before I do. You've got to be careful when you sit with people because you absorb it.
Yeah.
And so I, in that moment, closed my eyes because we were on mushrooms and I just envisioned this. I was surrounded by this almost iridescent abalone shell kind of color. And since that point, I've used that as kind of a protection because if I'm not careful, and as any empath is not careful, they could absorb a lot and it really kind of drops their energy down. So that's why I think it's a good balance because if I can't release that, my own or other people's energy, like it's heavy. And that.
But Mike, what an honor for me. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
I couldn't have done that had you not been willing to. And then I feel like it let you release.
Oh, absolutely.
Like you could just kind of be happy and joyful and enjoy, which was so cool to watch.
100%. And thank you for calling it an honor because it's like, I just felt like I was dumping into you all night and I don't understand why, but it was free. And you know, one of the things I learned that night about attention and where, you know, how imagination in a space like that, this can actually become a reality in a way. And so, Russell, I love how you were talking about just envisioning. If you don't know how to work with energy or just envisioning, imagine it and your energy will go there. You know, the energy will follow your attention. And, you know, it reminds me of any time I do Kundalini yoga in the morning, we do a chant at the beginning, a mantra. I don't know what the words mean, but it's like, Ad Gure Name, Jugat Gure, whatever. But like, as you're doing it, you're picturing a white light encircling you. And when I first got into Kundalini, I'm like, yeah, whatever. Well, you know, now I imagine it. I imagine it around me. I imagine it around my house and my loved ones. And I can play with that, like how open I want to be. And it's all just with my imagination. But that's where my attention's going too. And that's where my energy's going.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up because I think that's a critical part to journeying with medicine is so, and as I sit with people or we sit with people, they might find tension in their body. Oftentimes it's in the abdomen. We hold a lot of stress and pain there. And I'll just guide them to say, maybe take your hand and find where that pocket of pain or tension might be. And then when they can isolate that, I'll just ask, do you want to let that go? Are you ready to let that go? Do you need to hold on to that longer? And when they're ready, just encourage them to breathe deep. Breathe into that pain or that tension. And as they're breathing in light or white or whatever color feels healing and breathing into that. And then as they breathe out, they're breathing out kind of that foggy, that negative, that energy that has been trapped. And it's pretty phenomenal what happens when that breath work releases. The one friend I told you about with on mushrooms, she'd had a chronic pain in her body and just imagining her body breathing and moving that energy out within 2 hours. And this was not the intention at all, but she sat up and she said, that pain is gone. And I don't want to create an intention for people out there to say, oh, this is what will happen. It can happen.
Yeah.
But that was her letting go. And so I think that's something we can do daily without medicine, is when pain comes in. And I think we shared this with you, when tension comes in, like something happens, it's just like, we can feel it. And then, okay, how do I breathe this out? How do I want to hold on to this? Or do I need to let it go? One friend I was sitting with, I had given him some obsidian, which is a beautiful black stone that absorbs a lot of negativity. And I said, hold on to that. And I said, he's like, I've got pain, but I want to hold on. I said, I'm going to hold it with you. So I just squeezed his hand with him. I said, let's just squeeze it tight. I'm just holding it tight. I'm like, You tell me if and when you're ready to let it go. We did that for a couple of minutes. He's like, I'm ready. And when he opened his hand and just like he felt all of this energy kind of move into his body. And he's like, it's gone. It's released. So like you said, Mike, we can create that healing through the vision or the imagination.
That reminds me, Russell, sorry, I gotta remember names here, you know? So anyway, Russell, that reminds me of an experience that you and I had, towards the end of the evening. We were both kind of drained a little bit. We were sitting on the couch and just chatting side by side. And in fact, you were telling me some stories similar to the ones that you're telling right now, just about different people that you've sat with and some of the things that they've gone through and some of the cool things that you've seen. And one of the things that stuck out to me was every once in a while, when you're holding space for someone or when you're in those altered states of consciousness and you're in dealing with trying to heal some of these things. We talk a lot about the divine feminine. We should probably talk a little bit more about positive and divine masculinity, because we talk a lot in here about toxic masculinity. But a lot of times when some of these people that you're sitting and holding space with come face to face with the experience of divine masculinity, it's so new and confusing to them that there are times when they don't know how to deal with that kind of a presentation of masculinity. They confuse it for this weird hodgepodge in their mind of what they've seen, tiny little glimpses of masculinity. Is it a father type figure? Is it a lover? Is it a best friend type of thing? And the stories that you were telling me, it was like, oh man, I think people are coming face to face with something that has been so toxic in their life for so long that when they see a healthy, beautiful version of it, they don't quite know what to do with that information or how to interact or respond with that. So that was one of the biggest takeaways for me that night, was to lean into the positive traits of my masculinity and allow safe space for people to experience what it's like being around a safe male figure. You know what I mean? Male presence. Yeah.
Thank you for bringing that up, because we've been doing a lot of work with the healing the masculine. I think sometimes people get confused with masculine male versus feminine female.
Yeah.
We all have both of those in us. And sometimes men, we are taught not to allow embrace the feminine part of us because it seems gay or it seems, you know, soft. And yet the masculine part, we're taught in our upbringing that you can't cry, you shouldn't show emotion, you close down. So, and then you tie that with a religion that elevates you above women or the feminine. And so to strip that away and to look into, because we've sat with people. I remember one particular friend, he's like, I just need to open my heart. And so I sat with him, we did MDMA together, and I could feel so much resistance in his body. He wanted it badly. And so much energy was happening up in his mind. And so I went up and I said, can I just rub your forehead? He's like, please, because men, the masculine, the kind of unhealthy, we move way up into the brain and we stop feeling. And so just moving that, and I would move the energy down to the heart, and I could feel that heart expanding. And then I put rose quartz, which is really good for the heart. And he's like, I feel something burning. Like I feel a good burning sensation. I said, just sit with that, breathe into that, feel it, experience that. And so after that, it opened up. About 3 months later, I said, how are you doing? He says, Miles, here's the challenge. I experience those, and then I go back to day-to-day life and it closes back up, and I want that opened up again. And so we've been able to do breath work. We've got a men's group that we do breath work, and we'll get together once a month. And it's just training that muscle, those muscles, those masculine, healthy masculine muscles, especially the heart, to open up and to trust and to love. And that love starts with self first. You can't love anybody else until you love who you are.
Yeah.
I love that you talked about that. You know, when you guys are talking about your ayahuasca ceremonies, and how it uncovered, you know, deep seated unconscious, or maybe not even deep seated. I mean, but the story that you were gay because of something you did, or because of something someone did to you, and how that story was still playing.
Even the question, why am I gay? Yeah. Is an interesting question, because I've never asked that of myself. I've never asked myself, why did I turn up straight? Yeah. Not even a question I have to deal with. So interesting. Right. Yeah. Sorry.
No, perfect. And then, but one of the things I realized, when I'm on medicine, you know, Russell, we had a beautiful moment, just eye gazing into each other's souls. And I have that, on occasion with some people, but that was a beautiful, beautiful moment on the medicine. And whenever I'm on it, sometimes and I'm having that moment, I'm realizing even the story, the homophobic stories that are still there running through in my subconscious. And it triggers those, but in a way, I'm trying to decide where I wanted to go with this, other than I'm surprised sometimes at the stories I'm still running in the background. And the fear that's there of really gazing into another man's soul or eyes, or even looking at him and being like, man, he's an attractive guy, you know? And how it's still, there's still some stories, you know, that are there mm-hmm. around that. Yeah.
I think that's not uncommon. And thank you for sharing that. We all, And I'm maybe projecting something, but from what you said, it sounds like there's a little bit of that internalized homophobia, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's what I'm, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's kind of where you're going. And we have that. I think that's important for people to understand. Yeah, we're a married gay couple, and yet we still have some of that, or had, to some extent, maybe still have some of that internalized homophobia from our upbringing. It's impossible to not have some of that. And I think recognizing it and then giving ourselves grace in that, to say, okay, yeah, that's how it is and it's okay, and I just have to move forward with that, is important. And you shared some of that while you were there with us, and we really appreciated that.
Yeah. If it's okay, I wasn't going to, but can I share it a little bit?
Do it, please. Yeah,
can you guys hold space for this story here? Because
absolutely,
we have you. We got you.
Yeah, there's something about that, and you know, growing up in the Mormon Church, where they teach that sexual sin is next to murder, and then gay sex—that's even like, I don't know. I mean, but it's an abomination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, no wonder why it's so scary. You know, it's right. That fear is there. And I don't know why. I still grapple with why it was so scary to me at the time, you know? And there's an element of how much shame I was feeling, you know, growing up, masturbation, sexual shame. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, there's maybe an element where gay people are carrying some of our collective shame. We have someone we can dump our shame onto in a way. Mm-hmm. And maybe I was feeling that, and maybe I'm just trying to justify it. I don't know what I'm trying to do with this, but I had some, I still have, and it still shows up, some homophobia that comes out that surprises me. And when I was it was my first year at college, together with my friends, we passed out some homophobic flyers on the campus of the university. And we thought we were funny. We thought we were clever. And they were horrible, absolutely horrible. And I just wanted to share that. Maybe because this podcast is a way for me to confess my sins to the world. I don't know. Because I think what I really want is, until we look at our shadow, until I look at those parts, these ugly parts of me or that I feel are ugly, the only way we heal it, you know, and to recognize that as much as I want to consider myself the hero, we always like to be the hero, that I've played the villain plenty of times in my life, you know?
And thank you for sharing that, Mike, because I remember as you shared that in the experience in Sedona, you shared that with us, that we were able to also sit with you and recognize our own areas in life or times in life where we did something similar. Like I sat with you as you explained that as a gay man, sat with you and allowed you to experience that feeling of what you had done. And you were still there with me. Like we were able to be friends at this point in life and discuss that without judgment, without anger. And then I was able to actually sit and recognize the times in my life I had done the same things because I was hiding from myself. And I'm not, obviously I'm not saying that about you. You were saying it because you felt bad for what you had done. And here are two guys that could have been victims of that in some way, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And yet I, as a gay man, had done the same kinds of things when I was trying to be straight, when I was trying to hide. not exactly that, but something similar.
Yeah.
And I had to recognize that in myself. How could I be mad at you for doing that when I had done the same thing, kinds of things in my past as well? Because I was trying to hide.
And Mike, thank you for sharing that about this vulnerable. And I would ask, can you let go of that and forgive yourself?
That's a hard one.
I mean, go back to that time in college, and it doesn't have to happen necessarily now, but and I share this because we have a lot of men in these experiences that inevitably there's a story about, gosh, I treated this gay kid in high school really poorly. I was kind of mean. I'm so sorry. And it's kind of a vicarious work, if you will, that I think just speaking to it and releasing it, that makes you a more vulnerable and open person. And I mean, we've had plenty of men who are like, the straight guys are just, can I just hug you? Of course you can hug me. Like, and that intimacy, it's not sexual, but it's intimate.
Yeah.
And there's this part of our human connection, the heart to heart, that there's just, you cannot replicate that in other ways, and that healing that can happen. I've got straight friends that will just kiss me on the cheek and give me a hug. Like that is so healing for them and for me. And I can't speak for James, but there's a healing in that too. It's not sexual. I don't want to go sleep with them, but it's a beautiful heart to heart, human to human.
Yeah.
Connection.
An intimate connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things too, that's really interesting about our community, because we do, it's funny, like we talk about these experiences, but most of our experiences have been with people who have left the Mormon church. And for whatever reason, I think it's because we're culturally Mormon. We'll always be culturally Mormon, right? I mean, we're raised with it. You can't get away from it. Yeah. And so a lot of our connections are with people that kind of get it that way. Yeah. And so many of these guys we're able to sit with and let them express that in a way that they're accepting of it too. Like they accept us into that circle in a way they wouldn't have even just a few years ago, right?
Yeah.
So there's a real beauty in the community where once they get out of that, they're able to sit and be comfortable in themselves enough to allow us to be there with them. And we're not after them, right? Yeah. That's not our goal in life. We have each other. We're good. We're just there for friendship, and to have true friends who don't give a shit about our sexuality in that way, other than this kind of thing, right? Where yeah. we can be there, hopefully, to help heal some of that gap, bridge that gap that was there for decades.
I'll share a quick story if I can. Please, it happened in ayahuasca. Jim was on my right side, and another friend was on my left side. And it was a little tricky journey for me. I was processing a lot of things, and this friend over here, who is probably the most hetero, and I'll just use this as a label, kind of describe masculine. Just, you know, he's laying next to me. He leans over and he's like, "Russell, how are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm good." He goes, "I don't even know what you gay guys have gone through, but I'm imagining you probably understand the heart pretty good." I'm like, "Well, I hope." And he goes, "Can you just put your hand on my heart?" And I rolled over my side and I put my hand on his heart. And he goes, "Would it be okay if you put your hand under my shirt on my heart, on my chest?" He's like, "Is Jim okay with that?" I'm like, "Yeah, he's fine." I get kind of emotional talking about it because it was very sacred to have this man ask for me to hold that heart of his. And I could see in the medicine this burning ember, like, you know, those fires that you, those campfires that have the burning embers. If you just blow on it, they just light up. And I'm like, "We're going to breathe into this because I can see these beautiful embers. You have such a strong heart." We just kind of breathed together and he just was feeling this incredible heart energy. And then at one point I had to lay back on my back because my shoulder was hurting laying there. And so I put his hand here and then I grabbed Jim's hand and put it here. And this friend goes, "This is the fucking priesthood." Yes. And so there's power. There's this palpable power and energy and love in the heart.
Yeah.
Well, and it's bringing up some beautiful stuff because I love how you said the word intimacy, because even our culture, our men, and maybe I'm speaking for myself, but craves intimate connections and intimate connections with other men too. Those don't have to be sexual, but I think there's that fear of intimacy as well. That it's a beautiful thing. I don't know. And not the fear of it, but intimacy. Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah. Well, I'm having like what's that? Ahead, sorry.
Please. No, please go ahead.
Well, once you break past that barrier, right? And it's interesting because with women, and I want to go back to what you have to say, but just in this thought, women with gay men, we've been in spaces where they feel safe, sometimes for the first time in their lives, with masculine touch, because there's not a sexual and some, especially women who maybe had abuse situations where they will just, we will like sandwich them almost. Yeah. And there's a safety. So even with women, even though we're not attracted to them, there's this healing. And I'm not saying we're like these great guys, but just energetically when we
I'm get saying past, that you are these great
I'm
guys.
I'm echoing that. Yes.
Just so that we can get past that. Yes, it has been said that you are these great guys. So continue the story as if that has been spoken truthfully into the point. Yeah.
But Mike, you're right. And Doug, you're right. Once we can kind of part that veil of fear of rejection, fear of like, ooh, are they going to think I'm gay or whatever? There's just a beautiful connection. I can't say that enough. I feel like I'm repeating myself, but
yeah, I think the masculine for women is important. As much as some might not want to believe that, I think you have to have that, you know, those two parts together. And yeah, I've experienced that too, where Russell and I are able to really work with some women. And healing. It's really cool, really beautiful.
Yeah, that is beautiful.
Doug, you were going to say something tonight.
Well, I just, I'm having like minor, I don't know, and like minor revelations while we're having this conversation. So one of the cool things, there's like some connective tissue between a few of the stories that we've covered so far. Like very first thing we talked about was how James and Russell years kind of struggling with identifying what is this, what is my sexuality. James, you even said you came out to yourself 6-7 years before you officially came out to the people in your world, right?
Right.
Both a little bit later in life, right? You'd love to, I'm not speaking for you, but I'm sure there's a part of you that I would love to go back and live my entire life as my true self, my true identity, and be proud of who I am and just live loudly. And just in that same thing, you know, Mike, you're telling a story about something that you did as a 19-year-old or 18-year-old that you feel this thing about and you wish you could change that you did that, but it happened. I've got the same stuff. I mean, as you're talking, I'm going through all the bullshit that I've done and said and been in my life. But I'm just sitting here like having this thing of like, oh yeah, the simplest things are the truest thing. It's like the best time to, you know, plant a tree is 20 years ago. The best time to heal yourself is 20 years ago. Second best time to heal yourself, second best time to plant a tree is today, right now. And in that beautiful little like old cliche, you know, idiom, it lies all of this circular stuff we always talk about, time as a flat circle, quantum physics, healing the past or healing the present by healing the past. And it's like, Mike, I'm sitting here watching you. Look at your face right now. You're a little bit crestfallen because you're feeling this guilt or shame about something that you did over 20 years ago. We can see it, but it's like, dude, Russell and James are not who they were when they were 19 years old, as much as they would like to have maybe had an experience of living their whole lives the way that their true identity is. Just like I feel that way about myself. Just like you feel that way about yourself. But Mike, I know you well enough to know that if any of us were confessing what you're confessing right now, you would be the first to forgive them. You would be like, mm-hmm. You were a child. You were following in what you thought was the right footsteps. You were basically one of these kids that, you know, the Westminster Baptist Church people that go, you know, thank God for dead troops, hold signs for all this terrible stuff. And if you saw one of their children standing there with them, you'd be like, that poor fucking kid. Doesn't know what they're doing, doesn't know the hate speech that they're spewing, and they're just doing what their parents tell them to. And if that kid came to you, you know, 10 years later and was like, I can't believe I stood in those lines with, you know, thank God for dead troops or God hates gay men or whatever, you would be the first person to say to them, that ain't you now. Stop carrying that. Stop holding on to that. Stop feeling that. You would be the first person to say that to someone like that. So just, would you give yourself the same fucking common courtesy that you would give a stranger on the street who came to you and said, I feel guilty about something?
Yeah, Doug, that just really unlocked something in me there. It's because when I look at, you know, 19-year-old Mike is a separate person in a way, right? Going back, and if I were to go back and visit him, I could have so much compassion for that kid, you know? Who was just trying to be good. I don't know, just really, and was burdened. Yeah, I can have so much compassion for him. And yeah, I don't know, that you talking right there just felt, I felt, I'm crying, and it's feels like release of sorts. And yeah, because I love that kid, you know? And yeah, he did some, yeah, but I don't know what I'm saying.
He did some really human things and was very influenced by the environment in which he was raised and the stimuli which he was exposed to. And he's not going to recognize you because you've ascended like three levels from where he was, you know, and he's going to look at you and be like, who's this stranger? But you're going to fucking love him. Yeah. And you can give him the best gift, which is, okay, you got 20 years to look like you look like I look right now. You got 20 years to do it, and don't carry the burden of shame for the piece of shit that you are today, because you're going to get better starting today, every day until present. You know? And sorry, Russell and James, I do not speak for the gay community in forgiving Mike. I do not speak for any kind of community in forgiving any kind of person. I don't speak for the legal system for forgiving criminals. I don't speak for anybody for fucking anything. But I am going to try to, as a friend of Mike's, say, Mike, can you please love yourself at least as much as you would love some random stranger confessing this to you? Can you at least love yourself that much?
Yeah. I love that. And Mike,
thank you.
Can the 19-year-old version of James and I approach you on that campus as a 19-year-old as you're putting those signs up? And we're just going to wrap ourselves around you in a big hug with you in between us and just feel into your heart because you're such a good soul. There's no malice, just love.
Thank you. You guys, this is, I'm sorry to make this all about me.
No, because Mike, you represent a lot of men, who hold a lot of shame or what our culture taught them and our religion taught them. And you, I'm sure a lot of listeners resonate to this. And so any man or woman for that matter out there that's hearing this, please reach in into yourself and like, let that go. Just let that go, knowing that we in the community just want to love. We just want to love.
And Mike, you're not alone in this, because there have been, like Russell said, we've had several experiences with men who have come to us and expressed the same kind of thing. And their sorrow and their pain. It's real. It's real. And so thank you. Because that pain is real. It means that it's legitimate. You're not just saying it. It's really there. And so we feel that. And thank you.
Thank you for holding space for this. I was just looking at you guys. I love you guys. Love you. And 19-year-old Mike, we love a sandwich, a Russell James sandwich.
We'll give both of you a sandwich. You too, Doug.
I'll get on that.
Doug just gets in there. He's awesome. He just channeled some pothead Jesus.
Oh, should we talk about some pothead Jesus?
We might need to talk about
it. We talk about
it. Do you mind if we talk about the shelf idea?
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah.
Because I think this is an important thing that we learned. So coming out of Mormonism, we started to attach to like, hey, how do we replace spirituality in Mormonism or religion? And we would find different modalities of meditation or like stones or incense or whatever these things were. We had two shelves in our bedroom, one for James and one for myself. And as we collected these different things, it were like maybe it was a pine cone from a hike, or maybe it was a, you know, whatever it was, these became kind of these iconic things that meant spirituality to us. And then one night, it was like 2 a.m, we had this horrible crash in our room, got up, and our shelves crashed.
Literally, our shelves crashed.
And in that moment, I'm like, oh my gosh, we've created new shelves.
Yeah.
With these things that we thought are different from Mormonism or, you know, traditions or rituals. So I share this because I think it's important for people to understand holding these things loosely. Because if you're just going to replace something that you had before with something new, it may not serve you because it's going to become the same thing, just a different color. And so we singing bowls and crystals and incense, we hold it all very loosely because tomorrow that could change. And we might find something, some new thing where we're like, this feels more intuitive. This feels more aligned with who I am because I didn't know about it until today. So I just wanted to share about the shelves.
I love the symbolism of that. And, you know, I've gotten in moments where in these newfound things that I'm interested in and take to, whether it be crystals or tarot or meditation or any of it. You know, I don't remember what it was specifically, but I was talking, I think, to my mate, and we were talking about tarot, and she was talking about or crystals or one of them. And she's talking about what a friend had said to her. And I was getting triggered, like, as in like, no, this is like, I really like, this is kind of like, I believe in this stuff now in a way. Yeah. And then I'm like, why is this so triggering to me? You know? Yeah. And I'm like, because really I mean, a tarot has been, it's a good mirror for me and I've loved using it, but I love how you said, hold on to things loosely. And now I notice when something's triggering me like that, it's usually I'm holding onto it too tightly and I need to loosen up a little bit, you know, on it to be where it's like, look, take it or leave it. You know, it's resonating with me right now. And, but I love how you said maybe tomorrow it won't. Yeah.
So yeah. Shelves break even after Mormonism.
Yeah. There's something there. I'm trying to put words to it, but I can't figure out what it is. It's like you can take the zealot out of Mormonism, but you can't take the Mormon out of zealotry or something. It's somewhere.
It's all entwined, right?
we cut that part because I botched it. But basically, it's like, we're trading one thing to be passionately religious about for another, right? And
removing the zealot is hard.
Removing the zealot. Thank you, James. That's what I'm trying Jesus to say.
Jesus has arrived. So by Jesus. And we were out there on, you know, tripping and. When you came and sat by me, James, and I don't know if you're telling the story, but you kind of channeled Piehead Jesus for a moment. And I was
like, sat next to both. We were both sitting on that couch and he came and sat and started doing these Piehead Jesus quotes.
So I guess so. Pot was kind of the last right or last frontier for us.
Ironically,
it wasn't the gateway drug.
It's a finish line drug.
Because we really, it sounds like we're like constantly doing medicine. We're not. Like we really are careful. We don't personally take it very often. Right. We might sit with people. Doesn't mean we're always on it or in the medicine.
Giving your brain and body some time to kind of recoup. That's another piece to the research that people need to be aware of.
So I think it's important for people to hear that this isn't like all the time and it's not like we're just doing it. It's actually pretty spread out and we try to keep it pretty spread out if we do it at all. But pot, that's a different story. But it was our last frontier. We didn't really do it until months. It was almost a year. No, it was like 2 years.
Yeah, we had done ayahuasca, LSD,
mushrooms,
all of the.
But we're staying away from cannabis. We heard of
the the devil's weed.
That's right. Who knows what we'll do if we end up starting trying cannabis? What next?
That's a gateway. Yeah. So we did it, and it's really interesting because it's a powerful medicine, and it's one that. For me, it's easy to kind of channel some pretty cool energy and channel some pretty cool thoughts with. And so I was telling you guys a story of one night I was probably on about 10 milligrams. And I do a lot of meditation when I'm on pot. And so and we always do it safely. Like we're not going to go driving around. We're at home.
Right.
We are intentional. It's usually, you know, after we don't have like responsibilities or kids that we have to go take care of or anything like that. It's not like, you know, we're just going to willy nilly just do it. And so I'm sitting there in meditation. We do this really cool chakra meditation. It was like an hour long meditation. It was guided meditation on a podcast. And I'm going through the chakras. Well, I inevitably drift, right? I'm not actually listening to the meditation at all. All of a sudden I'm transported as I'm meditating. I'm transported to the foothills of the Himalayas. And I'm just sitting there in meditation, watching the scenery in front of me unfold, all of these beautiful mountains and, you know, the forest in front of it and the wildlife. And I'm just sitting there, the water running in my mind. And out of nowhere, this man pops in. And I recognize him and he's Jesus. And I love Jesus now. Like I was kind of in a space where I was like, I don't know that I believe in anything. Uh-huh. Right. Kind of agnostic maybe. And Jesus comes up to me and it's not like the blonde Scandinavian Jesus that we see in the Mormon church, right? It's like hot Scandinavian, Scandinavian Jesus.
Yeah, surfer dude Jesus.
Surfer dude Jesus. Yeah, no, it was Jesus. I mean, he was like really cool, Semitic, dressed in his wool or linen or whatever he had on. It was dirty. You know, he'd been walking and he was just how I imagine Jesus really was. He comes up to me and he looks at me and goes, "May I meditate with you?" And I looked at Jesus and I said, "Of course you may meditate with me, Jesus. I'm not going to say no to you."
Who says no to Jesus on a meditation?
Nobody says no to Jesus when he wants to meditate with you. And then he's like, "May I take a hit?" And I said, "Of course." And so I handed him my joint, and he took a hit. Now, this was in my mind because it was on edibles, but he took a hit and he sat with me in meditation for a while. And then he got up and he looked at me and he goes, "Remember that meditation started here," meaning the foothills of the Himalayas, "because this is where pot is from."
Oh,
and then he left. And so I had to look it up. I was like, "Is this real?" And sure shit, there it was. That's where pot's from. I don't know if meditation started there because of it. He could be right, but that's where pot's from. And so I was like, "Okay, thank you, Pothead Jesus." And I believed. I believed Pothead Jesus at that point. And so now I love to channel Pothead Jesus. I'm like, Pothead Jesus is my friend. And I get some pretty cool insights with Pothead Jesus. It's kind of fun.
That was the moment that you cast down your net and decided to follow Jesus in that moment.
Right? Yes. Pothead Jesus. Not other Jesuses, just Pothead Jesus.
He went straight away. "Come follow me. I get some freedom."
That's right. And I looked at Russell right after. I was like, I just had this moment with Jesus. And we talked about it. It was great.
And now, oftentimes when we're like laying there, we're on pot, and a quote or like some insight will come up, and we're always thinking it's channeled from Jesus.
Yeah.
So he'll get his phone out and put these quotes down.
I just start writing down these quotes.
A lot of t-shirts happening.
Yeah.
But I love the idea that Jesus is the guy who, you know, there's a ring, there's a circle going around, everybody's passing the joint, it gets to Jesus. He takes a hit and then he does not pass the joint because he has to tell about a couple of parables, you know, and the guy sitting next to him is like, "All right, I get it. The meek are going to inherit the earth. And there's this rich man. We pass the fucking joint." He's like, "Oh yeah, sorry." Because he just gets going, telling this big long thing, take another hit and be like, "The other thing about the Romans." Like, dude, pass the joint.
It's great. But Jesus is cool. We love Pothead Jesus. He's our friend.
Heck yeah.
He teaches a lot of great wisdom.
Same. And you were channeling him that night. I remember we were asking some questions. And so I'm glad we're introducing him, because I would love to do, we've talked about this, just like sit down with you while you're channeling him one time. Or maybe multiple times, several times.
Yeah.
Sit down. Maybe we can get some listener questions. We can do some stuff and like wisdom we can get from Pothead Jesus. And then we can either release it or we just cut it up into small bits and like, you know.
Well, Mike, it's not like we pepper commercials throughout these things. So maybe instead of commercials, we could just be like, "And now a message from Pothead Jesus." And then it's like this.
Love it.
Yeah. And then it's James doing like a whole thing, you know.
Brought to you by Flying Embers.
Brought to you by Flying Embers Hard Kombucha. Yeah.
Brought to you by the Gay Shamans.
Yeah.
Brought to you by www.gayshamans.com. Which I guess we could plug that website for a second.
That's true. We're putting together a website right now.
Yeah, so some friends
specifically for Russell.
Yeah, so some friends of ours were like, "You need a website. You're a gay shaman. You guys are gay shamans." I'm like, because I don't ever want that to be ego ever. Because shamans work hard. They've gained that title. It's nothing I want to be like, you know, egoic about. So I really carry that softly, and so it's hard for me to receive compliments and people like, "Oh, you did this and you did that." And like, it's the medicine, it's the person. So anyway, this friend of ours just got the URL. He's like, "Here's the domain." But
and transferred it to us.
Yes.
So
that's because I and James, we sit with people, and it's not like we're advertising it, but people will contact me or us, and I appreciate that, because I think sometimes in the medicine world, we'll call it the drug world for a bit, because sometimes people don't get informed. And yeah. A friend will say, hey, dude, here's some of this. And, oh, let's do it right now. And I don't want to judge that. I think what happens, though, is when there's not a lot of intention, like with you guys, we had months to prepare, right? We did Zoom calls. Yeah. We connected. We talked about intentions. So, and even going in fasting, we didn't eat, so that the medicine could do a full experience in us. So I think knowing those things now, it's easier to guide people on dosing and even the body type, their body type's going to handle it differently. And so I would to any listener out there, if you've never tried anything, do your research. And it's always probably better to start out with a low dose than to go crazy and take a huge dose and have what could potentially be a bad experience. I want to be soft about that too, because sometimes people say, oh, that was a bad trip. Yet there's something learned from it, right? There's always something learned from the bad trip or the good trip. But I think sometimes if it's careless, and for example, there was a lady I met, she's like, yeah, I've never done pot. And this friend of mine gave me these edibles, and I don't know, what should I take? She's like, I thought about taking three of these tonight. And I looked at it. It was like 50 milligrams per edible. And I'm like, whoa.
No, back up. Slow down, girl.
So research. Yeah. And test. Yeah. So.
But the site will be gayshaman.com.
Yeah.
So S-H-A-M-A-N, not shaman.
Yeah. And we
shaman.
We don't provide medicine to people, just to be clear.
Yeah. Right.
But if they have it, or if they just want to do meditation and sit or breath work, whatever modality they feel will help, or we could suggest that, that's what we'd like to do, is continue to help people.
Yeah.
Well, and we've had conversations about this before. The four of us have, and also on the podcast. So this goes into this interesting line that we try to, this tightrope that we walk between the concept of appropriation, or, taking over, holy sacred roles that exist within tribal. And then also that gatekeeping thing of you have to go to one of these Peruvian shaman to have it. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, there's a balance there somewhere, because when we say gay shaman, or when people Russell call you a shaman and stuff like that, it's more out of a limitation of vocabulary. It's a limitation of our language, right? It's probably somewhere along the lines of trip sitter, guide, safe empath type of person. But when you roll all those descriptors into the experience that a person has, it is very similar to what would be happening if you sit with a shaman, in the Peruvian jungle. I'm putting this in as a disclaimer that we know using certain phrases and terminology does come across as here's four white men talking about shamanism, right? But it's not that we're trying to steal or appropriate a something that exists within another culture. We're limited by the vocabulary that we have to call these people who focus in on actual healing, guiding adventurers and travelers through their psyche and through that experience, where they can have a healing and safe experience. Just a disclaimer real quick there.
Thank you. You worded it perfectly. Because even in the Indian Native American culture, there's in some tribes with gay men, they would call them twin spirits.
Or LGBT people.
LGBT, I should say.
Yeah.
They revered the twin spirit. In fact, the twin spirit is the one who the husband would come and talk to solve problems with his wife, or the wife would come to that LGBT person to solve problems with the husband. They would help them name their children. And so I would never want to take that title, because that's something that's very sacred to that tribe. But what it does tell us too is, our culture has tried to push LGBT into a box, and yet there are beautiful gifts, when allowed to thrive, that those souls, those spirits hold. And it's not a pat on our backs. It's just an awareness that trans people, you know, who are asexual, they have these gifts that we have tried to put away and distinguish or extinguish, but they're bubbling up now. And there's this beautiful kind of revolution, if you will, awareness of these gifts. So if we can just hold their gifts, it's a beautiful thing. And then it kind of helps us with our gifts too.
May I lay down a little bit of pothead Jesus wisdom right now?
Please.
Okay. So last night I channeled it a little bit because of a little, just something that Russell said, and it hit me. He said something about labels, and just because you were talking about it just now, and pothead Jesus has given us entheogens and pot so that labels are erased completely and we are just human.
Yeah.
That's starting out with a doozy from pothead Jesus. So, right. I mean,
right. That's the only one I'm going to give you today,
because when we're talking about how many labels we hold, male, gay, father, like all these, and they're good or bad. But then to strip that all away, we're human souls, just loving.
I love that connecting. So much. That is right in the wave I'm riding right now, is just trying to strip away all of that to say, okay, at the core, I'm human. And so if I can connect on a human level with the people I come into contact with, the other identifiers and descriptors they use for themselves can just be a way to get to know each other. But at the core level, we're humans having a shared experience. And let's get down to that. Yeah.
Guys, I'm feeling my soul right now. And thank you.
Mine too.
Thank you for what you guys do. I mean, I talked about the beginning, how I've missed our gay shamans. I mean it in the sense that you were talking about the gifts, you know, the twins, you call it twin spirits or twin spirits.
Yeah.
The gifts that you can bring.
Or two spirits.
You know, and in that medicine space, the gifts you gave us. I just want to say thank you, because you don't, even for what happened today, as minorities in the society, as victims often in the society, you don't owe anything to the perpetrators, right? Or the people. But because you're consciously wanting to heal, wanting to reach out with love, that impact is immense, you know? And you talked about how you being a safe space for women, and also being a safe space for, you know, for men that want to experience intimacy with other men and get over that shame and that the stigma around it. And then also just have a great time on a trip.
Yes,
but please. Because you guys are consciously giving that gift, it's so healing. And so thank you so much for doing it.
And thank you for, I can't speak for Russell, but I honestly really enjoy doing it too.
Yeah.
Like I enjoy that preparation. I enjoy getting there and setting up, and I enjoy cleaning up. I know this sounds weird, but it's like this weird, this is cool. The morning after, I get to see what happened. Yeah. It's kind of like this little excavation into the night, and everything has a meaning. Even, you know, the ginger beer bottle that we have sitting out, or the wine, or whatever it is, you know, it's just sitting there. I'm like, this is fun.
The misordered pizza that turned out
the pizza
best thing in the world.
Oh my gosh. It took days to get that pizza.
So Dan was on, you know, as Russell said at the very beginning of this recording, we all get rid of our devices. You know, it's like, this is a device free space. You know, we're here for each other's company and for music and for light and stars. But at some point we were like, we've been fasting for too long. We need to order a fucking pizza. And so it took three people trying to figure out how to order a pizza. And I believe there were a couple of false starts, right? There was a phone call to the pizza joint that ended up with a quick hang up because somebody got scared. And then then James is on the floor helping some people order pizza. They're about to push confirm. We're about to get this pizza. And suddenly Sixes to Nines by Big Wild comes on. James throws the phone and says, "This is my song." And
it's up. I got it in.
I don't start doing like this performative dance piece. Like I had no choice. I don't know if you remember, James. I had no choice. I was in the background, so I just started kind of doing like this doo-wop two-step behind you to like be your backup band.
Awesome. And, I'll take it, man.
Yeah. Fortunately, the pizza did eventually arrive, and all was well in the world. And but it was quite an experience. Ordering a pizza can be tough if you're not in the right mind frame.
It was spectacular pizza for Tom.
Yeah, it was. But that dance was even more spectacular.
That dance was worth the price of admission for sure.
And Russell, your scarf work when, that's something else.
But that will, when I was talking about Russell kind of on the tail end of the thing, really able to let go and experience, like Russell did this, what I can just only call an art piece for the rest of us with a scarf and dancing and using light and shadow and using, I was just like, holy shit, what in the fuck is going on here? Like, where am I? Like, I was really, really like, wait a minute. I feel like I'm at Cirque du Soleil. How'd I get here all of a sudden?
Yeah, you'll never see scarves in the same light again.
Thank you.
Never.
It's like pre-scarf, post-scarf.
Oh, I'm now actively collecting scarves. Mike's wearing a scarf right now.
I love this scarf.
That's awesome.
That scarf. That scarf loves you too, Mike.
It does. One thing I do want to touch on in intimacy is, and you guys have probably experienced this, but like, so here you get people together that may not know each other, and you have this incredibly deep connecting experience with medicine. And I found, and this is kind of backed up by people like Ram Dass, but if you don't have more to the relationship, that experience kind of just becomes like a solo little, oh, it's beautiful. So I think for people who want to continue to integrate with those people and have them in your life, you have to expand beyond just the medicine, because it's kind of like when we came out, when I came out, it was like all I could do was connect with gay people who got it. Like you could go from 0 to 10 in like 2 seconds, like, oh, you get me and I get you, right? Well, if that's all we had in common, and as I became more normalized in my sexuality, those friends who that's all we had in common with, I still love them, but they're not really in my life because there wasn't more to it. Yep. So I would suggest to any listener or friends, or if you want a deeper, broadened relationship and friendship, and if not, it's great. Do just the medicine. But if you want that, just know that you have to have those other layers of a developed friendship. I think Ram Dass put it perfectly, because he would, you know, he would trip with people every weekend, and these people are like, oh, you're amazing, I want to go to lunch with you. And all of a sudden he's going to lunch every day of his life, and he's like, I can't do this bandwidth thing.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to I want to say pick, but decide like where your bandwidth is right and with the people that you need and want in your life, and like spark up that conversation and say, I love your energy. I want to have you in my life. Like let's develop something outside of just I shouldn't say just medicine, but you know, just those pockets.
Yeah, you're dead on. And it comes back, Mike, this goddamn topic of boundaries keeps coming up. Right? I mean, and that's what we're talking about, is the boundaries of, yes, you can have a single serving. This is the people I like to trip with, but you can cultivate that, make something deeper, connect with have the people in your life that you want to have in your life. And I mean, what? I sound like I'm giving a Sunday school lesson, and cultivate that
Sunday.
Cultivate that feeling, and cultivate those friendships, and drop and put boundaries around the people you don't want to have those extended relationships with. I mean, that's fucking wisdom from the back of a dump truck, but there you go. You know.
Yeah, I would love to hear you guys speak to that, if that's okay, because you are doing this and you have a lot of people. As we do, we have a lot of people come in, and we kind of periodically will kind of create a circle. We'll literally draw on a paper the circle, and like, who is it in our lives that's in that energetic circle? And it doesn't mean that we think less of or love them less, but energetically. And we kind of have to do that periodically to kind of check in, like, how's my bandwidth?
Yeah.
Do I have it for you? Do I have it for myself, the people, our kids? And so I think, anyway, I don't want to answer. I'd love to hear your input on that. How do you balance that?
I mean, I'm still learning it. I think for me, I would love to be more intentional about it. You know, like, what relationships do I want to curate more? Which ones, you know, and set those boundaries a little bit, because right now, I mean, you know, Doug, when we first started out doing this thing, I didn't think it would grow to where it has. And, you know, it can get really overwhelming sometimes. You know, if you think of all the messages coming in, we create all these social media accounts just to kind of promote the podcast, but then it's like someone messaged from Facebook. Oh, I haven't checked that one for 20 days. I don't know when, you know? And, I right now, what I've been doing is I've been leaving my phone in the other room for a while. Just like, I just don't want to check it. But then that's not being intentional about it either, right? That's saying I just want to tune out. I don't know. I'm not good at this, is what I'm saying.
It's hard.
I mean, yeah, it is hard. That my answer is going to be similar to Mike's, but I've tried, and maybe the three of you have seen this even a little bit. I'm inherently already a bad text friend. Because I, you know, people will text me and I don't text back, and like, or I don't text back enough. You know what I mean? Like, someone will text me and I'll be like, cool. And that for me, that's like, cool. Thanks. We're friends. Yeah. But people want more than that, you know? And so I've been similar, Mike, to you leaving the room or leaving your phone in the other room, just with stuff like that, with phone calls, with texts. I've tried to set up an expectation that you're not going to see the little dots letting you know that I'm responding to a text as soon as you text me. I'm intentionally gonna wait and give it a while, because the true friends, the people who truly know and love you don't feel offended by that. They're like, okay, he'll get back to me when he gets back to me.
Yeah.
The people who want something from me, the people who are trying to take that relationship to a place that I'm not ready for, they'll get offended by that, and they'll text again. And I'm like, okay, this is why I'm setting the expectation of, you're not going to hear from, it's not going to be a day long text fest of like, you know, back and forth, and here's a GIF and here's a fucking cool thing I saw, you know, look at this picture of someone put chocolate milk in the regular milk aisle. Isn't that hilarious? I'm not that guy. I'm not that kind of a texter. I'm not that kind of a social media person. And so for me, it's like letting people know, hey, I love you. A general statement to the entire world, I love you, but here's what I have the capacity for, or the bandwidth for. And I'm still learning that. I'm not very good at it yet, but I'm at least more aware of that. I can consciously do things that will help set those boundaries for myself and for others. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that, because I think when people are wanting that out of us, it's making it about them and not like friendship, right? And energetically, when you're feeling that pull or that drain, or like, hey, for me, I just have to kind of step back and go, wait, that energetically, that's not what I need. And maybe it's a more candid conversation to say, gosh, I love you, and here are my boundaries.
Yeah.
Like, this is my bandwidth, and not that you're not important, but I have these other things that are really like, it's survival kind of things in my life day to day.
Yeah. And that's how I know who I love most. I mean, Mike, you've seen it. The last 3 weeks I've been almost impossible to track down. And some people have been frustrated by that, but Mike has just been, every time I send Mike a thing that's like, hey, sorry, I've kind of been out of it. Every time I get a response back from Mike, that's like, what, don't say sorry, you're doing exactly what you should be doing, and I love it, and I'll talk to you later.
Sabbatical, like, man. That's, you're on the, like, you're,
yeah. And so it's, I get messages like that from a lot of people, and then there's just a small handful of people that are like, hey, did you not get my phone call? Did you call me back? You didn't respond to my email? I'm like, no, I didn't respond. I got no time for it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Anyway, that's kind of a, I don't know. I'm talking selfishly right now, but this is good.
I think this is important because as we create tribes, those tribes expand, and it is bandwidth. Mm-hmm. We deal with that a lot.
Yeah,
it's a good rabbit hole. Thank you for sharing how you.
But there's also the element that you know it's a good problem to have if you feel like you know setting boundaries to like because too many people are coming in a way. That's a good problem. I mean, I love people and I love having people in my life and there's lots of people in my life and I'm grateful to have you two in my life, you know?
Yeah. Me too. Likewise, all of you guys are amazing. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you for coming on today. I know it's been like a lot of, you've seen how Doug and I just suck at scheduling anything.
That's good.
Here we are, though, right?
Yeah,
it happened when it needed to happen.
And if it didn't happen, it would have been okay too. Like it's again, holding intentions loosely. We have to keep that in mind.
Well, I'm fucking glad it happened. Yeah, you guys really filled my bucket today. That's true. Yeah.
Honestly, every time I talk to the two of you, I mean, every time we do this, Mike, I feel like it's a therapy session, but every time I talk, James and Russell to the two of you, sorry, I'm trying to be good about name dropping
you're great. All good.
I just feel, I feel in a new higher vibration. Like I feel better about myself. I feel better about life. I feel, heard and seen and loved. And that's something that the two of you bring to the people you care about. So without putting words in your mouth, it makes me feel like I'm a person that you care about every time I'm around you. And thank you for that.
Thank you. And we do. We love you guys.
Yes. We're just really lucky. We have an amazing group of people in our lives.
And we're really blessed.
And you're in that. Yeah. We really love that. And we talk about you guys a lot. We're like, you guys,
we talk about you a lot.
You've got to get on this Facebook page, and you've got to listen to some of the podcasts. And so,
I think you've single-handedly doubled our Facebook
I think I did. Yeah. I really wasn't intending that. It was just like, I was so excited.
Yeah.
I was like, this is such a cool movement. And we know so many cool people that can benefit from this. I was like, invite. And I realized I invite a lot of people.
I love it.
Yeah. I think what's beautiful too, the message in that is that people are seeking a spiritual path that they've left. And so this is one of those ways that's like, we had a good friend who wasn't raised LDS or anything, and we call them our bus friends, which is dear people. But he lived in an ashram for 6 years, and he met some of our friends who were post-Mormon. He says, "You are lucky because they're seekers. Because they were taught to seek."
Yeah.
And so, thank you for providing another platform for people to seek.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Yeah.
You're doing good stuff.
I love you guys. Really love you guys.
Love you guys.
I'm sorry about my voice this morning. I honestly feel like I should be like in a smoky lounge.
Singing you have a sexy voice. Yeah, it's great.
Exactly.
Just go.
This is my hangover
today.
Voice.
Yeah.
You got the Jesus hair going on. It's all good.
Well, I love it. Yeah.
I'm not fighting off a cold, everybody. I've just been shouting for the last 2 days.
Well, thank you,
guys. Much really love.
Talk
soon.
Love you.
Thank you.
And let's record Pie right. of Jesus soon. Let's get him out here.
Yes, let's do it.
Right. We'll schedule it. I'll text, but I'll only expect a text back in like the next week or so.
Yeah.
Okay. Love you guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to Mormons on Mushrooms podcast. We have so much fun recording it. And if you love it, we would absolutely love it if you could leave a review on wherever you get your podcasts. It would really help our visibility so more people can listen to it and be enlightened and hear our crazy stories. So thanks again for tuning in.